Fiction has been said to cast history in a clearer light than nonfiction. Anne Marie MacDonald sets out to do just that in her second novel, The Way the Crow Flies. In this fictitious history of the height of the Cold War some 40 years ago, MacDonald uses the tensions generated by the U.S.-Soviet arms race to explore an age-old issue, government secrecy. Martha Woodruff from member station WMRA reports. One note, there's some rough language in one of the readings from the book.
The Way the Crow Flies tells of the near destruction of a happy Canadian family. As the book opens, the McCarthys, parents Jack and Mimi, children 8-year-old Madeline and older brother Mike, are moving to Centralia, a Canadian Air Force base. Anne Marie MacDonald uses this sleepy, pleasant community as a literary laboratory to examine the Cold War world.
You've got an Air Force community. That's an intensified microcosm of what was going on in the outside world in that post-war American dream time. For me, this novel is about what happens when global forces intersect with local ones.
Life soon becomes unpredictably complicated for the McCarthys. Each family member begins to keep secrets in a misguided effort to protect each other. But it's Father Jack, a wing commander in the Royal Canadian Air Force, who locks the family in its downward spiral. Jack McCarthy is a likable and brave man who sees the Cold War as a threat to his family's safety. He's seduced into helping a former flight instructor who's mysteriously connected with British espionage. When Jack becomes uncomfortable with his secretive role, he and his old instructor argue.
This war, the one we're engaged in now, makes me pine for the last one. Any fool can die for his country, Jack. I don't happen to think 40,000 Canadians were fools. I'm not belittling the sacrifice made by my friends and yours, by my younger brother, for Christ's sake. I'm pointing out that you and I don't have the privilege of fighting and dying. We have to live, and we have to make decisions. We had to make decisions in the last war, too, but they weren't all secret. The guilt and the bullshit and the triumph were shared, and we called it duty.
The novel opens in 1962, which Anne Marie MacDonald remembers as the nexus of Eisenhower togetherness and arms race paranoia.
I'm a product of the Cold War. I'm a product of Western middle-class society. The first television generation, the first generation that knew it could all be over in a matter of days if they, you know, quote-unquote, pressed the button.
And in 1960, the first generation to come to grips with the fact that even democratic governments will spin the truth.
When Gary Power's U-2 spy plane was shot down over the Soviet Union and Eisenhower found himself caught in a lie, apparently that was the first time that the mass of Americans really understood that sometimes their leaders were going to lie to them. And then a couple of years later, opinion polls reflect the fact that people expect their leaders to lie to them from time to time in the name of national security and democracy. And I think, you know, this is where we find ourselves today.
The book is about dirty secrets. It's about personal dirty secrets and governmental or public ones, and about the relation between the two.
Mark Seltzer, UCLA professor of English, is interested in mass media, which he sees as everything from news to novels. He's curious about how this hodgepodge of information affects our understanding of real events.
When fiction tries to expose the nasty governmental fictions that are floated, it's in a little bit of quandary. Fiction is make-believe. Make-believe makes belief. Fiction is about believability, credibility, about believing the make-believe.
And fiction could be so believable that readers might use it to fill their factual gaps. Philip Zelikow is executive director of the 9/11 Commission, the group charged with finding out who knew what before the events of September 11th. Dr. Zelikow argues that America's current creaky, outmoded bureaucracy of governmental secrecy encourages the confusion of fact and fiction.
Create fertile ground for all kinds of wild conspiracy theorizing. Area 51, the X-Files, the literally hundreds of television shows and movies in which secret government agencies populated by assassins and other ne'er-do-wells somehow invisibly operate around America and the world. These dreams, these conjurers' nightmares are in many ways products of the fact that people don't understand what's going on. Because if they did really understand what was going on, they'd probably be impressed by how ordinary, human, and banal it all is.
But one suspects that Anne Marie MacDonald knows exactly what she's up to in this novel. With our current concerns about terrorism, MacDonald feels we have become too accepting of governmental secrecy, and she hopes her novel will help jolt readers out of their complacency.
I'm not interested in cheating the reader or teasing the reader or setting off little grenades. What I like to do off the top is to invite the reader and to assure them that we're going on a journey and that they're welcome. It's going to be a bit scary, but I'm here. I'm with you, and believe me, we are going to get out of this together.
The final section of the book takes place 20 years later. Not everyone in the McCarthy family has survived the damage done by all those well-meant, well-kept secrets. As Anne Marie MacDonald puts it, what do shadows do? They catch up. For NPR News, I'm Martha Woodruff.